Live local high atop the Kia Studios in Midtown Atlanta. It is On the Marks on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I am Jason Marks. You can listen to us online anytime, anywhere at 92.9thegame.com and on your radio.com app. So, yeah, never too early to get a little college football in, which, by the way, at 1:20 we'll be joined by Bo Estes from NBA.com and NBA TV to discuss the conference finals, the hiring of Lloyd Pierce, and the upcoming draft lottery. But we're going to have a little bit of participation. If you want to chime in on the show, give me your scenarios for the 2018 season. There's not one that's too obscure, not one that's too smart or too dumb to throw out there. Like, for example, Florida State will win 9 games this season. Then I will tell you whether I believe it or not and why I believe it or not. 404-741-0929. You can also tweet your responses at the station at 929thegame or on my personal Twitter at OnTheMarksRadio. And Greg Patton, producer extraordinaire, I'm going to bring him in here, and he is going to lay out a couple of scenarios, and I'm going to tell you whether I believe them or not, if they will come to fruition in the 2018 season.
Okay, I'm going to start off with something that I think a few people are whispering about right now.
Okay.
David Shaw will exit college football after the 2018 season.
I do not believe that. I don't believe it because I think that he has a good situation in Stanford. Like, we always talk about Georgia Tech, where the academics, you know, that excuse, the academic standards are the reason they can't play to their full potential. Well, at Stanford, they're contending for Pac-12 championships and are at times in the conversation for the college football playoff. And I think that he's given a lot more autonomy, which is why you will never see Nick Saban in the NFL ever again, because he has full autonomy. He has the keys to the Ferrari. The only thing he just doesn't have to do is wreck it. So could it possibly happen in 2019, 2020? I could see that. But as far as 2018, I don't believe that he will be there at all.
I completely agree with you on that because he would have taken the Colts job otherwise. You mentioned Florida State.
Right.
Texas A&M now with Jimbo Fisher will be the story in the SEC West next year as they will finish second.
I'm going to say I don't believe it because there'll be a secondary story. The story in the SEC West is always going to be Alabama and if Alabama can be knocked off the pedestal. Texas A&M will be a story because Jimbo Fisher leaving a prominent program like Florida State to go to Texas A&M in the SEC West, where it was already as tough as it is. It will be a story, but it will be, I guess you could say, story 1A. It could be story 1A or 1B. But I don't think that it will be the story of the SEC West in 2018.
You need a story in each one of those, though, because it can't be Alabama all year. They get tired of Alabama by middle of October.
But it's still going to be the story.
It will be.
The story is always going to be who's going to knock Alabama off. That's always going to be the story in the SEC West until Alabama gets knocked off and they're not in the conversation for the college football playoff, which I don't see that happening anytime soon.
In the overcrowded Big Ten, Wisconsin will finish in the top 10 in the AP poll back-to-back seasons.
Are you counting that as end of conference championship games or after bowls?
I'm saying the final AP poll.
The final AP poll. Wisconsin will finish in the top 10. I'm going to say I believe it, and I think they will be right at 10. Because the thing about Wisconsin, and you look at the Big Ten West, which I think is Nebraska's going to be a lot better under Scott Frost. Purdue's going to be better, but they're not going to be in contention. Indiana has gotten better. They're not going to be in contention. Iowa is always going to be that thorn in the side. But Wisconsin always seems to find a way to beat them. We always talk about Kurt Ferentz and the 20-year contract that he always gets. And he always just lives up to mediocrity. He has that one season where he's just on the cusp and it's gone. But I would believe that Wisconsin would be in the top 10 at the final AP poll.
An interesting one, and a lot of fans will be very happy if this happens because they're going to meet about it when the SEC meetings show up. The SEC will decide to add a ninth conference game.
I don't believe it. I don't believe it. You're talking about for next, the not 2018, but for 2019. No, I don't believe it. I don't think it'll happen. If it happens, it won't happen until 2020. Because I think putting that extra game in there could be a little bit detrimental. I think that the SEC knows that. Now, if you look at it from a money standpoint, a TV rating standpoint, oh, it's golden. It's golden. I would be all for it because, to be honest with you, I would rather see another Georgia game where they're battling another SEC West opponent than I would then to see Georgia against UMass, Georgia against Appalachian State, Georgia against whoever out of the FCS, Samford. But then again, there's going to be a lot of crying of foul because the programs like Stanford, who get the $500,000 checks for these games to fund their athletic programs, they're not going to be big fans of it because the pickings are going to be a little less slim, at least in regards to the SEC money. But if you want to look at it from a strategic standpoint of the brand always being in the picture for the college football playoff, it could be detrimental because that one extra loss could put them on the outside looking in or maybe just skirting in as maybe that two-loss team like LSU did back in 2007.
I am all for it. I want those old rivalries back that we've lost because of the out-of-conference. Yeah.
Thanks, Texas A&M, Missouri. I just said that out loud.
Yeah, you did. Jared Stidham will live up to the hype at Auburn this season.
I believe it. I think that the offense, once they got things going at Auburn, that offense was very potent. And it showed near the end of the season. Heck, as Georgia fans, we saw it one weekend on the Plains. When they get it together, they are a very potent offense. And if they would have gotten it together, they could have beat the brakes off of Clemson because Clemson's offense was moving nothing against that Auburn D-line on that day. That was a very ugly game for Clemson. A lot of that was the credit to the Auburn defensive line. But if that offense would have even been half of the potential of what they would eventually be later into the season, yeah, I absolutely believe that Jared Stidham will live up to the hype as Auburn's quarterback because I think that he showed that promise in the last half of 2017.
Jake Fromm will complete 65% of his passes next season.
Don't believe it. I think it'll be around the 58 percentile. I think that he will be effective. And like I said, when you're losing the likes of a Nick Chubb and a Sony Michel, it's going to take a little bit of a step back. Yes, you've got some young running backs potentially for the future. You've got Elijah Holyfield that could come in. You got Zeus for the future. But I think regaining that chemistry, which you lost now with Javon Wims going to the NFL, Jake Fromm, I think that there's also going to be a lot more pass rush. There's going to be a lot more batted passes. The only way that you complete 65% of your passes is if you are in the Big 12 where they play just absolutely garbage defense.
And finally, this one is the one I'll be watching the most. This has nothing to do with playing on the field, but it will do everything to affect the current state of college football. The NCAA will have their player-paid court case heard by the Supreme Court this fall. It will backfire, forcing a weekly siphon by the 2020 season.
I believe it because I think that there's a lot more pressure, especially nowadays. And the media has completely turned on the NCAA. Let's just face it. As far as amateur status, the media has completely turned on the NCAA, and for good reason, because a lot of their impermissible benefit rules are completely stupid. And what was the story that Arian Foster said in regards to Phil Fulmer, that he had an empty refrigerator and he called up Coach Fulmer and he said, if you don't do something about this, I'm going to go out and do something stupid. And then allegedly Phil Fulmer went out and bought Arian Foster and some of the other guys a whole bunch of tacos. Which, by the way, if it happens to be true, credit Phil Fulmer for being business savvy, because you can get a soft taco at Taco Bell for $1.19. You could buy about 50 of those, and you can feed two or three football players for under $50. If that happens to be true, that's very frugal. But I think that it could be even earlier than that, I think, because the heat that the NCAA is getting in regards to player compensation and the revenue that comes in from amateur status players and the rules, just crazy rules. Yeah, I definitely think that this will be heard sooner rather than later. Coming up next, we'll talk with Bo Estes from NBATV.com. Eastern Conference Finals, Game 1 happens today. Game 1 in the West happens on Monday night at 9 o'clock. And we'll also talk about the Lloyd Pierce hire and delve a little bit into the future when it comes to the draft. That's all coming up next. It's On the Marks on Sports Radio 929 The Game and online at 929thegame.com. Live, local, high atop Kia Studios in Midtown Atlanta. It's On the Marks here on Sports Radio 929 The Game and online at 929thegame.com. The conference finals in the NBA kicked off today, and joining us right now from NBA TV and NBA.com is Bo Estes. Bo, thank you very much for taking some time to join us.
It's my pleasure. It's our time of year, man. Conference finals going on, getting wound up for the NBA finals, and then straight on into draft. So constant work on our end, but love talking hoops, man.
Yep, it's going to be a busy couple of weeks, and it started off today with the Eastern Conference Finals between the Boston Celtics and the Cleveland Cavaliers. And in the last series with Philadelphia, everybody seemed to be writing Boston off, and they really surprised everybody. Well, not me. I figured that they would give Philadelphia a run, but now they come in the game one against LeBron and the Cavaliers. And somebody brought out an interesting analogy with LeBron when it comes to like a boxing match. In game one, it's almost kind of like he just lets the opponent take the punches, and then as the series goes on, that's when he starts coming in the haymakers. Do you think that's about an accurate assessment?
Well, maybe to some degree. I mean, I would be concerned about the rope-a-dope analogy if I was LeBron himself, because Cleveland didn't just lose. They were thoroughly dominated, and LeBron himself was dominated in a way like he rarely is. So, I mean, I think there are some issues for him to work through. Boston is a very good defensive team. They held the Cavaliers to 83 points. That's their second lowest total of the postseason. They're 3-18 this year when they score less than 100 points. So they have to put points on the board. LeBron goes for 15 points, only took 16 shots. The leading scorer today was Kevin Love. Boston seemed to figure out a way to send a double team at him that at least confused him a bit. And if those other guys aren't knocking down shots, the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to have problems. Now, you mentioned people who have underestimated Boston. You know, count me among them. A normal team that loses a Gordon Hayward and a Kyrie Irving and turns to young guys and goes against LeBron, it's not going to be easy. But this is a special group led by a special coach in Brad Stevens, and they seem to be able to keep winning these games.
And I know we're going to be talking about the draft a little bit later, but you look at some of the draft picks by the Boston Celtics with Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. They've really been stepping up for him in this postseason.
Yeah, Jaylen Brown's a local kid here from Atlanta who led them in scoring with 23 points today and was tasked often with guarding LeBron James, who is bigger and stronger than Jaylen Brown. Look, he's the initial guard. Marcus Morris guarded him a lot too, and Marcus Morris famously says, "I can guard him," but you know they're going to throw a lot of guys at LeBron. So Jaylen Brown leads the team in scoring, but they have three guys that score 20 or more in this game. It's the first time they've had three go for 20 or more in a playoff game since back in the Rondo KG era. So I think what Boston did today was they made it difficult for you to figure out how to come back at them. And that's something that, look, LeBron, as physically talented as he is, he's just as good mentally. So he's going to have to figure a lot of this out. And if there's anybody that can, it's LeBron. But does he have enough weapons to go with? I mean, like, look, other starters outside of Kevin Love, George Hill was 2 of 4, Kyle Korver 2 of 6, J.R. Smith 2 of 9. So that's 6 field goals from 3 starters combined. They got to get more. They got to get help somewhere. And, I they swept Toronto, so you'd think, oh, they can do it. Boston's is really just a tough matchup for a lot of teams.
Bo Estes here from NBA TV and NBA.com, joining us on the WadeFord.com hotline on the Marks on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And I'm going to put you on the spot here with one of your coworkers and a coworker of mine as well. Rick Kamla tweeted earlier today that if Cleveland loses game 2, is the series a wrap in your opinion?
No, not at all. I mean, I don't know if Rick said that it is a wrap. I saw Rick at an Atlanta United game the other night. We don't get to see each other as much as I wish we did because we sort of repeat jobs. We both do update desk stuff in the afternoon. He hosts the shows at night. But, I certainly don't think it's a wrap at all. You know the famous expression that a series doesn't start until the home team loses. Well, it's not necessarily true because if the home team wins every time, then it goes 7 games and Boston would win the series. But nonetheless, I think, you know, if Boston wins the second game and they win it convincingly and they again seem to confuse LeBron, it's tough. It's tough to see what the counterpunch is for Ty Lue and company because that's what it comes down to, a big, big adjustment. Today's deficit at halftime for LeBron, they were down 26 points at the half. That's the most points LeBron has ever been down in a playoff game in his career. Just think about this. This is not the Golden State Warriors that are doing this to him. This is the Boston Celtics who have suffered all these injuries, and they held a LeBron team to 35 points while putting up 61 at the first half. It was a bad, bad blowout, and bad blowouts happen, but he has to have an adjustment so does the team.
And speaking of Golden State, moving over to the Western Conference, the Warriors are actually going to be on the road against Houston coming up Monday night for a 9 o'clock tip. And you look at this team, we talk about the Golden State Warriors, and they're almost kind of like the Monstars or the Axis of Evil, whatever analogy that you want to put in there. And Houston, with a typical Mike D'Antoni team, they're that team that likes to put a lot of offense on the board, but they also give a lot of points up as well. Do you think that this team could be equipped to beat Golden State, or do you think that maybe Golden State can wrap this up in 5 or 6?
Well, we've gone with one boxing metaphor so far with rope-a-dope. Let's go with a puncher's chance. I think Houston really has a puncher's chance. Nobody shoots threes in sort of the volume way that they do. So if they're really hot from three and it's really going well, I could see them having a good chance. They're the number one team in the NBA this year, and that's for a reason. They were really, really, really good. Now, Golden State had a lot of injuries that they dealt with, and they sort of gave up that number one seed. This is the first time in the Steve Kerr era that they're going on the road to start a playoff series. They're going to have to adjust. They're going to have to figure that out. But if any team can, it's the Golden State Warriors. Look, if I'm picking, Golden State's a favorite to me and a semi-heavy favorite. The one thing that I think people need to know, Houston wants to shoot a ton of threes. The best team at defending the three in the playoffs right now is the Golden State Warriors. Golden State famously shoots threes. They're shooting the second worst in the NBA playoffs so far. That has to change. Golden State's going to do better at that. So all of that put together spells trouble for Houston as far as I'm concerned. But again, I really give them a puncher's chance because if the shots are falling from three, you know, they're going to win. They're going to win games. It's just, can they make those difficult shots with a team against a team that really does guard the three well?
Bo Estes joining us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. Now let's move a little bit local. The Atlanta Hawks are going to formally introduce their new head coach, Lloyd Pierce, on Monday. And I've been torn on this whole issue because I was confident with a rebuild that the Hawks were going to go with Mike Budenholzer. He is gone now, and they're bringing in an assistant with no head coaching experience. He's very highly touted amongst many people in the league. talk me off the ledge here and build my confidence back up in regards to this rebuild.
I will say this. I think he is the perfect guy at this moment for the Atlanta Hawks. He's a guy who just went through, you've heard the expression, trust the process, in the Philadelphia 76ers turnaround. He just went through that process. Where Atlanta is right now, Atlanta is a team that is going to acquire and develop young talent. I was just talking to a former GM the other day, and he told me there's three coaches in the NBA, three types of coaches that you hire. One that develops young talent, another one that gets you really ascending towards the playoffs, and one that wins championships. Now, look, that can be one person. It doesn't necessarily have to be three different people, but that's the three different stages of a franchise, and that's the three different focuses you go out and look for in a coaching search. Lloyd Pierce is perfect for where the Atlanta Hawks are right now. He has the experience. As you mentioned, he's very well thought of in the NBA circles. So, I hear you with Coach Bud, Coach Bud was great, and Coach Bud really has an offensive system that works if he has the players. You come to a meeting of the minds and say, does he want to be here at this point in the franchise where they're going through a rebuild, or does he want to try to win games right now? You know, if his heart's not in it, maybe it's the best move for both sides. I really think that. I think this is one of those times where it's good on both ends.
And now we move to the next phase of the rebuild, I guess you could say, the NBA draft. Coming up at the end of the season, the lottery is going to be announced on Tuesday. And there's some, including myself, that are sitting here. You know, Atlanta Sports Luck is going to go in. We might get the seventh. Maybe those games that we won near the end against Washington and so forth may come back to haunt you. Looking at this lottery, and the thing interesting about this is, like, you watch the Georgia lottery on the television, you see the ping pong balls floating around. We don't see this in this. All we do is just see the cards, and they get flipped over, and then you pan over to the representative. What gives?
That's correct. That's correct. That's the way it is now. It's not like you're watching, the news at night. It's bing, 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 and, you know, a ping pong ball comes out. Like in the old days, I mean, that's the way it really was long ago. But now it's a little bit different. But, you mentioned seventh pick and coming back to haunt the Atlanta Hawks. This is the thickest draft we've seen in a long time. That doesn't mean you don't want to be at the top of this thick draft, because the top two players have sort of separated themselves, in my view. So if Atlanta could land way up there, I think the turnaround clock is quickly accelerated.
And hypothetically, which pick out of the top 10 that are prospected, which one's the best fit for Atlanta, in your opinion?
For Atlanta, it's tough because, you know, you're talking about two things. Who's the best player? Who's the player that the Hawks need most? And also, and I think this is an important thing in Atlanta. Look, I've been here for a long time, since I was a kid, since Dominique was lighting it up down there. The town needs a star that they can gravitate around, someone that they will go down and watch play. To me, there's a couple of guys in this draft that sort of could fit that. There's DeAndre Ayton, the giant center out of Arizona, is a super talent. I think a lot of people see him going number one. Marvin Bagley's a guy a lot of people know about who has, you know, you've heard the expression, tremendous upside. He has tremendous upside. He has all the skills in the world to get out of Duke. Trae Young is a guy who can light it up, and his game looks, at least aesthetically, a whole lot like Steph Curry's. So it would be fun to watch. And the name that most people don't know, who may be the best guy in the draft, is Luka Doncic, the kid from Europe. I think a lot of people would consider him the number one pick in the draft, too. He's at 18 years old, 19 years old, the MVP of the EuroLeague. That never happened. A dominating force and a player built for the modern game. So if you're telling me if you're asking who's the best player in the draft, I think it's Doncic. If you're asking me who maybe if you had the number one pick overall, you could get fans down there, et cetera, et cetera, I think that may be Ayton. It's a close call because the Atlanta Hawks have to decide what they want out of this pick and where they want their franchise to go.
I knew I liked you for a reason, because I'm all on board with the Luka Doncic train.
Oh, yeah.
Because
he's unbelievable. I mean, if you go online, that's the challenge, though, is because do people really want to sort of take the time and learn who this guy is? If you give him 30 games in the NBA, he may have to adjust the pace, et cetera, et cetera. But this is a guy who is 6'8", has point guard skills, who can pass like a genius, can shoot it from anywhere. I mean anywhere. Like you're talking just shy of Steph Curry range. And he's 6'8", athletic as it gets. He is everything. But, you know, again, I wonder if he is the – say Atlanta magically got Luka Doncic. Are fans going to go wild for him in Atlanta? I think it takes time to grow that. I think the Hawks to me are a very smart organization now, and I think that they will sort of pick the best fit and not worry about that aspect that you and I are talking about on the radio because we're, you know, maybe wanting to see the Hawks do well. They're going to pick the best player, but I do think as far as moving the meter right away, maybe Ayton, Bagley, Trae Young are better fits in that regard. But long-term, boy, give me Doncic all day long.
Well, I think a lot of it, too, is maybe that there's the ghost of Darko Milicic, who was picked by the Pistons sure. Like way back in the day. There's kind of that fear of the European draft at such a high number.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's largely gone. I hope it is because it's at this point, you know, look, people didn't want to pick Kristaps Porzingis. Kristaps Porzingis is great.
Right.
He's absolutely outrageously talented. And then, you know, you can blow it on a local kid too. You can blow it on an American kid. I think those days are sort of gone. I think that was really true 10 years ago. And I think that's just less true now, but I say that as somebody who watches the NBA closely. As a casual Atlanta Hawks fan, am I going to get invested in this kid from the start? That may be a different question.
Well, Bo, I was going to get with you about the LeBron maybe offseason, but I think we're running a little bit out of time, so we will save that for as we get closer to the offseason. We'll talk about that. It seems like it's going to be another teaser for LeBron and Super Friends coming up as they try to take down the Axis of Evil. But, Bo, real quick, tell us what's on tap for you this week on NBA TV and NBA.com.
Okay, so I will be on television the next 2 days, Monday and Tuesday, on NBA TV, doing the afternoon updates. You can catch me at the top of the hour with any news on NBA TV. Then later in the week, I'll have the highlights on NBA.com. And you can, as always, join in the discussion on Twitter at NBA Bo BEAU. So NBA BEAU. And we love to talk basketball anytime. So hop on and join in.
Thank you very much, Bo. Coming up next, our Big Fat Stupid Society. A little bit of a real-life Breaking Bad going on here. We'll talk about it next right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
Sports. Let's mess the world. Why you get sex and love and guns like cigarettes? There's too many men, too many people making too many problems. And there's not much love to go around. Can't you see this is a land of
live, local, high atop the Kia Studios in Midtown Atlanta. It's On the Marks on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and online at 92.9thegame.com, which, by the way, if you missed the first hour, the podcast is up on demand over at 92.9thegame.com to go check that out. But now we take our break from sports as we look into the doldrums of civilization and the self-inadequacies that they impose. That is our big, fat, stupid society. Now, I know that probably a lot of you have watched the show Breaking Bad. And you probably watched Narcos. Or any documentaries on the likes of Pablo Escobar. How they smuggled illegal drugs around the country or from country to country. So on and so forth. And a lot of that usually gets caught in the state of Texas, just like this man and his innovative way of avoiding the law. A Texas police officer doing a routine traffic stop made a shocking revelation when he discovered 71 pounds of meth tightly packed into the car's gas tank. This is in Round Rock, Texas. Along Interstate 35, they noticed that a Honda Accord he pulled over was driving too close behind another vehicle. That's why he got pulled over, because he was tailgating. And tailgating really is not a
good idea to do, even if you're in a hurry. But that's a sidebar. That's a topic for another time. When they brought in the K-9 units, the perpetrator gave a conflicting story. And they brought in the K-9 units who positively identified the drugs in a modified gas tank in the vehicle. Now, you're asking yourself, well, how are you going to be able to get methamphetamine into a gas tank and still be able to drive the car? Very good question. Inside the tank was a small pocket reserved for what appears to be gas, but otherwise the vessel was packed to the brim with crystal meth, a street value of $2 million. Now, at first I was thinking, I was like, well, that seemed like a dumb idea, but Honda Accords, they get pretty good gas mileage. So probably if you were able to leave maybe a quarter of that tank and you were able to modify a vessel for gasoline, you'd probably be able to go 100 miles before you would have to fill up again. But that's not what got him caught. What got him caught was tailgating. So the public service announcement, at least one of them, is don't tailgate when you're out on the road. Cops are going to get you, and if you're carrying 71 pounds of meth in your gas tank, that's on you. Now, here's another dumb story out of Bismarck, North Dakota. Christopher Lee Martin, 43 years old, and Tanya Christina Zluka, 38, were charged with burglary and felony drug charges for allegedly breaking into a treehouse. You want to talk about the ripple effect in this? I'm getting to that. That contained drugs, drug paraphernalia, a machete, and a sword. A deputy with Burley County Sheriff's Department stopped Martin and Zluka around 2:40 p.m. That even makes it better in broad daylight. They were driving in it with an obstructed windshield. While they were being questioned, Martin told the deputies that he had been canoeing on what is called Apple Creek. When they saw a treehouse, they decided to check out. Number one, I've always learned, if you're going canoeing anywhere in the South and you hear banjos, you just keep paddling. Which, by the way, why would you even want to go into a treehouse anyway, especially if you're a 43-year-old man? But that's beside the point. The deputies located the treehouse, which had a lock on the outside. The owner of the machete and sword confirmed they were stolen from the structure, and he also said that the Xanax was taken. Now, you're probably thinking, well, maybe it was a prescription vial of Xanax. No big deal. Well, you would be wrong. The value of all the Xanax that had been taken was worth $5,750. So if you want to talk about the ripple effect here, where the guy apparently who put the drugs in the treehouse ratting himself out by saying, yeah, my Xanax was taken too. Well, what was the value? How much of it? Oh, it was about $5,700. You're kind of out of yourself there, aren't you? The case still remains under investigation, but a woman who answered the door of the residence where the treehouse was declined to comment, but she said the man who told the deputies the Xanax was taken from the shed does not live at the residence. So now we got a squad on our hands. So a ripple effect. Two idiots break into a treehouse, and now they get the other guy in trouble. Because think about it, a treehouse would probably be a decent place to hide Xanax, I would think. Not now, especially when you got two idiots canoeing and want to go check out a treehouse. Now, Greg, you and I talked a little bit about the annoyance of food. I was laughing at something. We're talking about the pickiness of some people when they're like at a fast food restaurant or just in food in general. They're food snobs. I have friends that are food snobs. I call them food snobs. Yesterday, we talked about somebody getting shot over an argument over peach cobbler. Well, I guess you could say this is the more sophisticated version of stupidity. Josh Berger, a plaintiff who bought a pint of Diet brand Halo Top ice cream under the impression that it was regular ice cream, is suing the company because of false, deceptive, misleading labeling. He's filed the lawsuit against Eden Creamery, who is the parent company of the LA-based Halo Top. According to court documents, and this is from The Gothamist, the lawsuit alleges that, quote, the brand name Halo Top is misleading because consumers often associate the word halo with the color yellow, consistent with the common dictionary definition, which refers to it as a disc or a circle of light surrounding or above the head of a saint to represent their holiness. This is true. I'm reading it verbatim from the article. Consumers also know that yellow is the color associated with butter and cream because of milk produced by pasture-raised and forage-eating cows. The Post notes that Berger was bummed to find it was harder and less creamy than regular ice cream, which really most of the time, if you buy Bluebell or anything like that and you try to put your spoon in it, it's going to be kind of difficult at first.
Have you had Halo Top?
No, I haven't.
I have. It is not ice cream. I had the waffles and the waffle syrup one, and I could not believe that they had instructions telling me to leave the ice cream out for more than 10 minutes.
I'm glad that you actually brought that up, but everyone knows you need to microwave a full pint of Halo Top around 60 seconds before sinking your spoon in to get the full creamy texture. So, Pat, what's the review on Halo Top? Is it good?
2 out of 5.
2 out of 5?
And what I would say is it is right now at the epicenter of the food snobs.
Okay. So what you're saying is this guy has a case.
He has a case, but he should have just spent his money on Haagen-Dazs.
Fair enough. Okay. Now, you want to talk about a story here. I know that all the guys out here have had that crazy stalker woman after the first date. You've had at least one. But have you had one to the magnitude where you were sent 500 text messages today, probably sent some of those too, to an equivalent of overall 65,000 texts? Well, that's what a woman in Phoenix, Arizona did. Jacqueline Claire Atis, 31, of Phoenix, was arrested Tuesday on charges of stalking, threatening, and intimidation and harassment by communication. Police observed, quote, numerous threatening messages. That's where it's going to get you right there. In one message, Atis wrote that she wanted to bathe in the man's blood. Another message, she reported claimed that she'd be like the new Hitler. The man was a genius. She also wrote that she'd kill the man if he ever tried to leave her. After the first date. If you ever remember the movie with Glenn Close and Michael Douglas, Fatal Attraction, the only thing that's missing from this story is the rabbit boiling in the stovepot. That's the only thing that's missing from this.
Did she break into his house?
As far as I know, I don't see that. When the officers arrived, they found Atis in the residence taking a bath. She went into his home. He said she was arrested, charged with trespassing. She was acting irrationally outside the man's office. Scottsdale police said when they arrived, she was the man's wife and they removed her from the property. She even said that they were soulmates.
She was watching the movie Obsessed with Beyonce and Ali Larder, and Idris Elba was the guy getting stalked. She just did every single one of those, Jason, in one day.
I'm not going to go into any assumptions or anything, but if there was any extracurricular activity, he must have been really, really good, or he's just guano crazy.
Where are they registered so I can send them a gift?
Somewhere in Phoenix, Arizona. I don't know. All right, when we come back, I do have a public service announcement, though. It might help you with your relationship and your marriage. Ladies and gentlemen, you might want to pay attention. That's next here on Sports Radio 929 The Game and 929TheGame.com. Final segment of On the Marks on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Bo Estes for joining us as well, talking a little NBA. But I have a public service announcement for all of our listeners. This could be vital information for you. So, ladies, if you're listening, thank you. And gentlemen, this could be vital and maybe improve your life a little bit more. There's a study out of Germany that they say those women with the sharpest sense of smell were up to 6 times more likely to be, and I'll PG it, stimulated during sex. And they say that the best way to improve or maybe just get your senses full throttle is blowing your nose before sex. So, you're going home, you're and things are a little bit stale. Just go and say, well, honey, just blow your nose before we go. Just give it a shot. So, I'm here to help. I give you the vital information that you need. That's going to do it. Never take a day for granted. Find the passion and good in your life, and may you be blessed with all the bliss in the world. It's On the Marks on Sports Radio 929 The Game.